When you visualized a man or a woman carefully, wrote Catholic novelist Graham Greene in The Power and the Glory, you could always begin to feel pity. That was a quality God's image carried with it. When you saw the lines at the corners of the eyes, the shape of the mouth, how the hair grew, it was impossible to hate. Hate was just a failure of imagination. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to Wyoming Catholic College's podcast, The After Dinner Scholar. Wyoming Catholic's founding document, our philosophical vision statement, talks a great deal about the imagination. The college will, it states, seek to educate the whole person, the mind, heart, and imagination. Imagination is vital because it's the way we see the world around us, the way we image reality before we even think about it. Thus, to use Green's illustration of visualizing a person, we see before we even think. Do we see someone who, like us, is deserving of kindness, pity, and love? Do we see someone in God's image? Do we know immediately, to use C.S. Lewis's words, that, quote, next to the Blessed Sacrament itself, your neighbor is the holiest object presented to your senses, close quote. Not as a statement of doctrine, but seeing as through a lens. To talk about imagination and how we form Catholic imaginations in ourselves, in our students, and in our children, we have with us Dr. Glenn Arbery, president of Wyoming Catholic College. Welcome, Dr. Arbery. In your most recent Wyoming Catholic College weekly bulletin, you wrote, quote, I grew up in a town in Georgia half the size of Lander, and it remains a powerful presence in my imagination almost half a century after I lived there. What do you mean by imagination in that context?
Well, maybe that's not exactly the word, but in part it's memory. It's the memory of the people I knew there, the specific places, the way that people talked, the prejudices they had, all those things. And I guess I think of it in terms of imagination because my hometown was the basis of the novel I published in 2015. And it was set there. Everything about the way I imagined the characters had to do with what I had known growing up and then how I changed it. And I guess the imagination comes into play in the way that you reconceive what you know. And I think that's probably what Coleridge meant when he says that it unifies or it takes into account all kinds of disparate elements and then remakes them into something else, something like that. But I can't imagine, there I go again, knowing the world in the way that I do had I not grown up in a small town, which was the world that I inhabited. Mm-hmm. It was my first experience of things. So I think that's why it's the basis of my imagination.
What difference does that imagination make in the way you see and understand the world today? And
a number of things. I think, you know, one thing is that coming from a small town gives you a sense of the coherence of a particular way of life. You know the prominent people, you know the people who have no importance in the community, you know the courthouse, you know the churches. So you see the institutions, you see the people, and it gives you a sort of coherent picture of what human life looks like. Not in every respect, but in most of them. So I think it's kind of informed the way that I see things.
And certainly the sense of place. I mean, I grew up in suburbia. Yeah. And that's not the same as being in a small town. You know, now living here in Lander, I really see how very different that it is from where I grew up.
Yeah, and I've just come back from New York City and I can see how it's very different from growing up in New York City.
So I grew up not far from New York City, right. And New York City has a feel of home to it.
Well, I can see how for the first time. It always just seemed to me an incomprehensible place. But having been there for a few days right in the middle of Manhattan and seeing the way people interact, you know, you can see how that would be a world.
Mm-hmm. Now, at Wyoming Catholic College, we talk about educating or developing our students' imaginations. How does that happen? Through the curriculum, the outdoor leadership program, the Catholic identity, and so on?
I think it happens everywhere. The first thing they do is go up into the mountains, where they see the most spectacular images, in some cases, in this part of the world. They take those images in, they remember them. I think they become part of who they are and the kinds of aspirations that they have. In art, in science, in literature, they're always encountering images. They add on to what they already have experienced in forming the way that they see things. For example, if you're doing a work of art, one of my favorites is Bruegel's The Harvesters, which is a painting of these harvesters in autumn, and you see the half-cut rows of wheat, you know, you see the distant ships far off, you see the sleepers who are having lunch up in the foreground. And it's the kind of painting that the more you look at it, the more you dream into it, the more you kind of look at what each person is doing and take in the whole of it. I think that's what you do with literature also. You enter into the way that a world exists imaginatively in a text. I'm sure you do that in music, in liturgy, in prayer. You do things that are similar. You're always being given some experience through the senses that enriches your imagination. And imagination always has to do with possibilities, it seems to me. If you don't have any imagination in the sense that your mother used to say, well, use your imagination if you're bored, you know. What does that mean? It means that there are possibilities there that you haven't conceived simply by looking at the flat facts around you. Once you begin to figure out how to shape those and do something else with them, you're using your imagination. And I think our students do that all the time. I'm reminded of a poem they read when they first get here. They memorize it, actually. It's Keats's On First Looking into Chapman's Homer, when he compares reading Homer to the experience it must have been for an astronomer to see a new planet swim into his ken. So you get that excitement of science when some new possibility opens up. All of those things have to do with imagination, and I think our students encounter them all the time in what they do.
Now, having brought up the example of our mothers telling us to use our imaginations, if the imagination can be educated, it stands to reason that it can also be maleducated, and it can even be starved and destroyed. Tell us something about that.
You know, the wonderful writer on this is Tony Esselin in his book. I forget whether it's 10 or 12 ways to ruin the imagination of your child. The great text for this is Dickens' Hard Times, when the teacher, schoolmaster type, Thomas Gradgrind, insists that everybody learn nothing but facts. If you have any fancy or imagination involved in what you're thinking about, you need to get rid of it, because all that's important is facts. So I think the more you insist on a literalness in things, the more you tell children not to play or to do something useful, the more you starve the imagination. I think today people are incomprehensibly worried about the achievements and accomplishments of their children that they drive them from thing to thing without ever giving them any leisure to play. I think you and I probably remember countless hours of just sitting and playing, and how enriching that is. Because the whole time you're doing it, you're taking these pieces of wood or these little soldiers and you're imagining a whole world around them. I think that's crucial, and the more you take that away from children, the more you starve who they're going to be.
Yeah, we take that away and give them video games instead.
Exactly, and so there's no engagement of their own making in that so much as there is a kind of reaction. I'm sure they get good at the games, but it's not the same thing as being good at the imagination. Mm-hmm.
Going back to literature, I know that one of your favorite works of literature is Homer's Iliad. How does the story of the anger of Achilles, son of Peleus, that brought countless ills upon the Achaeans, how does that contribute to a healthy, even a Catholic imagination?
Well, for me, Achilles is one of those figures without whom we would truly have starved imaginations, because he is the closest thing to a Greek god that you can be and still be mortal. In fact, the whole nature of the poem has to do with his coming to terms with his mortality. He's like everybody else in having to die, but there are some special things I won't get into that make his mortality more of a kind of metaphysical crime than anybody else's would have been. And in this regard, he's sort of like Adam, in the sense that Adam wasn't born to die. He has to die as a result of sin, and Achilles is in something, it has the same intuition, I'll say, that death is a metaphysical wrong. The other thing about Achilles is that more than with any other character, you sense what the feeling of being divine and having to die would be. And this is truly, I think, a way to anticipate what the incarnation is. In other words, the great meditation you could have on the life of Christ is, what does it mean to be God, to be truly God, and to be truly man at the same time? In other words, what does that feel like? What is it like to inhabit such a consciousness? And Achilles is Homer's intuition of something not as great, but in the same direction. And I think it's crucially important for students to encounter someone like Achilles, whose rage comes from the fact that he of all people has to be insulted. He of all people has to face death. And it puts, again, it puts the passion of Christ into a particularly interesting perspective. I also think the whole cosmos of the Iliad ennobles the imagination in some very interesting ways that we don't have time to talk about.
Well, knowing that educating our imaginations is a lifelong process, tell us about the Splendor of Imagination Conference for adult learners that Wyoming Catholic will be hosting this June 11th and 15th.
Well, the first thing I want to say about it is that everybody needs this kind of renewal. In other words, as Bishop Ricken said years ago when he started this program, he's hoping that programs like this will help us in a kind of new Catholic Renaissance. And I think the only way that'll happen is for people to really get over their workaday lives and enter into something that really involves what we're calling the splendor of imagination, looking at the best works, the greatest minds, and thinking into what they show us, at least for a few days. So from the 11th to the 15th of June, we're going to be thinking about the theme of exile, which might sound strange to begin with, but it's one of those situations that I think everybody feels. I think all of us feel like we've been exiled in some way, that the reality we had hoped to encounter, the richness of life we had felt would be ours, is somehow not ours, and that we feel ourselves to be estranged from it, exiled from it, however we want to put that. But we're going to be reading some great works, including the Bible, particularly the book of Exodus, the works of Plato, where the being in the cave and moving out of the cave is a tremendous image of exile from the true world. We're going to be thinking about Dante, we're going to be thinking about Shakespeare, and I think it will be a very attractive set of readings, not just challenging, but deeply attractive in the best ways, because these are the deepest questions that we have and the deepest kind of imaginative experiences that we can encounter.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
The American humorist Mark Twain observed, "You can't depend on your eyes when your imagination is out of focus." Fortunately, our imaginations are not fixed, but can be properly focused for the good through worship, through study and community, and through encountering the beauty and power of God's creation. All three will happen June 11 to 15 at the upcoming Splendor of Imagination Conference, and we invite you to visit our website, wyomingcatholic.org, for more information. We'd love to have you join us this June.
For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tunkwich.